This program is sponsored by Blazing Grace Ministries.
This radio program is PG-13. Parents strongly caution some material may be inappropriate for children under the age of 13. Set me free. Jesus' mission was to comfort those who mourn, bind up the brokenhearted, proclaim liberty to captives, and open prison doors for those who are bound. For those who want more than status quo Christianity has to offer, Blazing Grace Radio begins now. And here is your host, Mike Janung.
Hey, Mike Janung here, and welcome back to Blazing Grace. Thank you for joining us. I'm coming to you from Romsey in the United Kingdom, southwest of London. Today I have with me Mr. Elliot Frisby. He is the founder and director of Monkey Nut here in the UK. He started his career in music at the age of 16. He was a professional singer by the age of 17. Today he is a host of the Outskirts of Faith podcast, and Monkey Nut is a leading creator of Christian audiobooks here in the UK. Elliot, thank you for joining me.
This is fantastic. Thank you for having me.
So let's get started by having you share your story. Tell us your background, how you came to the Lord, your experiences in media.
Well, it's really interesting because I went to church when I was younger. My mum and dad split up when I was very young, and we didn't go to church after that. But the biggest pull away from the church was that there was a cot death on my uncle's side. And the interesting thing is, though, is I always felt the presence of what I now know to be the Holy Spirit, and to feel the love of God. I would just feel it with me the whole time. And I always felt like I had a purpose when I was younger, of which we all do. But I kind of always acknowledged that and carried that around with me. Jesus came later on in my life. Though later on, I realized that Jesus was always there, just standing on the sideline going, woo, 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 go for it. So we bore you with all the story, but at the age of 14, I remember having the urge, growing up on the seaside town of Southend in Essex. We made our way down to, I just made my way down to a bench, and in the studio, when I'll show you after this, there is a picture of a bench framed. My wife took a photo of that for me and framed it without me knowing. And it's a bench when I just felt like I had to sit there, and I was looking out at the sea. And it's funny, I was only looking at some dodgy little place across the sea, but there were lights on and it was dark, you know, because it's getting in the winter time. And I just felt this voice saying, you've got to get out of here. There is work for you to be done. And at the age of 16, I was in a band at this point playing guitar, and that was my escapism, I think, playing music.
And so are you one of these guys who picked up music easily just by looking at an instrument?
I have worked as a musical director for cruise ships and things like that in the past, but for me, I like to have an understanding of instruments. So I never became a phenomenal guitarist or a phenomenal pianist or anything like that. I'm more about, you know, employ someone in who plays it well and to do a good job. Let's keep the industry flowing. But for me, I would say I could generally get by on most things, you know. I've been producing before, and we're in the studio and we're like, right, we need this. Oh, we haven't got time to get someone in. I'll give it to me. We'll just do a very simple version. So, to have an understanding, and I think it's good to have an understanding, a bit like the Bible, really. You know, you need to have an understanding of the old to appreciate the new, you know, Testament. So I left home at 16. I was in a band. I was financing it. And then one day, someone came up to me and said, hey, there's this audition going for it. I really think you should go for it. And at a young age, I always felt the tingles going down my body when it was God speaking to me saying, you know, you go for this. And I got that quite clearly. So I went for this gig. And
you said you left home at 16. Were you living with your mom?
I was living with my mom and my stepdad and my brother and sister. Yeah, that's right. And I left. And anyway, it turns out I got the gig out of a lot of people, and And I suppose that's my university. My wife says it's my university. And, you know, I sort of live life, I explored, but I was doing it my way. I didn't really have a strong male figure in my life and I was figuring it out, making mistakes. And then I ended up working on cruise ships, traveling around the world. I ended up on, you know, radio, had my own little TV show on Sky for a while. Then I ended up on albums with people like Don McLean and David Essex and playing guitar for Robin Gibb from the Bee Gees, and ended up at the one day I was performing the Royal Albert Hall with Shirley Bassey, and next, like singing before she was doing her bit.
So you're a studio musician?
No, I was more of a live person.
Oh.
Yeah. So that was the Beatles' 40th anniversary at the Albert Hall. And there were loads of people just got bought in, and I was just working hard. I've always worked hard. And I was in the right place, and I got invited to do the gig. And so I've done that. And then, you know, but then a few days later, you're playing to like four people in a venue, who just don't care that you're there. And I remember supporting the Beach Boys when they came over to the UK. That was cool. So did all these things. And the reason why I say all this is not to say, oh, look at all the stuff I've done, is to say that's where I thought my journey was going. That's where I thought it was. And to be honest with you, I still have dealings with music. But then I've always been about serving people and being there for people. And one day I got a phone call. Elliot, I got an audiobook that we need to record. Can you record it? And I'm thinking, well, yeah, I mean, I can record an audiobook. And I got this feeling, gosh, this kind of tingle over my body. And I was like, what is it? They said, well, it's a devotional. I didn't really know much about devotionals. And I said, tell me more. And anyway, I was really exploring Jesus at this point and having questions. And that's really weird, isn't it? Isn't that weird as a Christian saying, I had a relationship with God and felt the presence of Spirit, always being Spirit led, but I was developing a relationship with Jesus, because if you don't know about it, you know? It was pretty cool. Suddenly I got a phone call from the producer saying, wow, they had a really great time and they've never really been sort of treated like this or served like this. Can you do another one? And then another publisher heard. And it was really weird that everyone who came through the door had answers. What I was recording had the answers to the questions I was having. And then it was like I was getting a crash course, you know? And I really felt that presence of God saying, all right, you've done that. It's now time for this. And we just got so busy and it was really incredible. And I just wanted to serve and I just wanted to let people know about Jesus and God and the Holy Spirit. And there's a lot more to this story. I won't bore you with it all, but I will tell you one thing, which was really cool, that I was in my garage one day and I said, and it was so busy and I just prayed and I was saying, God, look, you know, I'm, you know, really busy here. And of course, you know, you want to give me what I can manage, but I don't think I just need to. And I felt this kind of, the only way I could describe it, I felt an audible laugh. That's the only way I could describe it. And the phone rang.
So were you in a one-man show at this point?
Yeah, but at this point, so what I should say, I've made so many relationships along the way. I built a strong team around me. Oh. So I had editors and I had people I could call all on board. But yeah, so at this point where I'm telling you now, we were quite established. But the phone rang and it was a publisher and they said, oh, Elliot, it just popped into my head. I was like, really? I said, look, you know, I'm not sure what your workload's like, but we've got all these projects that we need done on a super turnaround. Can you do it? And I was just like, yes. Yes, I can do it. Send it over. And this is what I did. I put the phone down. And I don't know if people are watching this on camera or just hearing that, but I had my hands up in the air and I went, fine. Fine, whatever you want, God, it's yours. Monkey Nut is yours. Do whatever you want with it. Take it. I don't care. I will do it. I will serve in any way you want. Just, it's yours. It's not mine. It's yours. And suddenly we just got busier and busier. Mm. However, I don't know how busy we got. It was all done with peace. And it was all achievable. And we managed it. Mm. And a real passion for mine are the people who walk through the door. Because churches are great, churches are important, but we have to remember that as well, that Jesus didn't go to a Christian church. You know, it was like he was out and about doing, you know, getting his feet dirty and really getting in with the nitty and gritty of the people, you know. And, you know, similar to like what you're doing. And I have loads of people come through here, come through the doors at Monkey Nut, who have gone through things, who are going through things, who have, who are doing great work, who are really reaching out to people. And if people aren't finding their way into the church, they are going out and meeting them wherever they are. Mm. And that's really great. And I'm really passionate about that. And I mentioned that on the Outskirts of Faith podcast that, you know, the people that we have on, we may have like famous theologians who we record. And then you've got Sam, the plumber from down the road, who's just out there just praying as he goes along. We've got a cleaner who just prays on the houses that she's cleaning. And, you know, then you've got people who have been raped and abused, and they are taking that and they're helping other people through that. And if that's not Jesus on their side, you know, I don't know what is.
So you get to help them communicate the message of hope and healing.
Yeah, absolutely. And I pray that it'll always be so, you know. So people write books. They write books for a reason. And we record them, but we like to go that sort of step further, and we guide them and we support them. And we, I go and do talks about this, you know, because, you know, if you imagine you've got a book in front of you and it's like, you know, my depression, how God got me out of my depression. I'm just making up a book title here. Okay. But, let's just say you've got that in front of you and you're sitting on the tube or a subway. Or whatever, and you've got a book like that. Some people may feel uncomfortable doing that. Mm. They're saying, "I'm depressed, and I'm exploring my faith." But what they can do with like audio is that people can put it in their ears, and in their own world, they can open up some doors to Jesus. And I can't help but think of, and I love saying this to people who, you know, sometimes you meet people and you just want to sow a seed. And I love saying this to people, and that is, you know, Jesus didn't say, you know, let's all go to church right now and pray. I mean, he did say, you know, when more than one pray together, you know, strong prayer, and that's really important. We must do that. And there is an importance of church, but he did say, take yourself off into secret, a paraphrase, and meet your Father who's waiting for you there in secret. And I just think that is so gorgeous, so gorgeous, because what that, I feel a bit emotional saying it, because what he's actually saying is it doesn't matter what you're going through, who you are, it doesn't matter about any of that. You can right now be in your place of secret. No one, the enemy can't get in there. You can just have that. I've got goosebumps over right now. Like you can just be in that space wherever it is. And it doesn't matter what you've gone through today. It doesn't matter what you're going through. This very second, you can turn off this show and say, Father, I am here. I am yours. I'm your son. I'm your daughter. And I want to know you. Mm. Let's have that relationship. And it's so powerful.
Amen. So I want to ask you, how old were you when your mom and your dad split up?
I think it was actually my first memory, I believe.
Oh.
Yeah. My father, my dad, I don't actually say father, I say dad because my father's in heaven. My dad actually died a week ago, yesterday.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And, he had faith, which is great. But yeah, three. And I remember him leaving and knocking on the window, you know, saying, you know, let me back in, you know.
You're around three?
I think I was about three.
So that's a profound loss. How did you heal from that?
I don't think I ever did, Mike. Honestly, I was going to say it as it is. I don't think my parents are going to hear this show. So I'm going to just be honest. My stepdad, you know, he's a good person now. Like he's learned his lessons. People learn at different times, and often it's a reflection of your childhood, that you carry on. And, you know, I remember being sort of knocked about a little bit, you know, my brother and myself's heads banged together and seeing stars and all that. And,
seeing stars?
Yeah, I remember seeing stars. Yeah.
That sounds like a got a beating type of thing.
Yeah, you know, but the thing is, he at this stage in his life, he would do anything for me, you know, but that was hard. And my dad, I saw him every other weekend, and I just wanted to kind of make him proud. I wanted to make him proud, and I needed a male figure in my life. My screw ups in life, I think, or possibly because I didn't have a strong male figure in my life. And that's why I'm just dedicated to be the best dad I possibly can to my children. And my dad and myself, we didn't talk for a long time. I see him every weekend, and we didn't talk for a long time. He never really understood my sort of journey, and he couldn't really have a conversation. He didn't know how to have a conversation with me. I knew I could call him at any time, but there just wasn't a relationship there really. And what was beautiful before he died was that we were talking, but the conversation wasn't expanded, but we had reconciliation really. And I was able to, well, when he was dying, I was able to sit down and read the Bible to him and share old films. And I was talking to his wife actually today, and I was actually saying that it was, it's weird because I feel sadness because every funny, my kids love hearing stories when I was younger with my brother and sister. All my funny stories were at my dad's. All the funny stories, my love for music, and I really like John Denver, for example, you know, because I grew up listening to John Denver, you know, singing songs, and I could teach things like Les Mis and Phantom of the Opera and back in the day because I used to wake up him playing it. But I never really had the sense of when he died, I'm not experiencing loss, but I'm experiencing sadness.
You said you reconciled. What did that look like?
Well, I tried once. I think that people can be very stubborn, and I think they know if there's reconciliation, they know what they need to do, but they'd much rather the other person phone first. And so I remember calling him, and it was like, "All right, son. Yeah, hi, dad." And it would be. I'd be like, you know, how's it going? Yeah, fine. How the kids? Fine. Right. Right. I've got to go. I'm like, oh, okay. Bye. And he would go and all this stuff. And,
so he really wasn't quite there.
He couldn't. Yeah. But it was hard for me because he was really able to have good, he made everyone laugh, you know, but then what you do is you get older. I mean, I'm 45 in March. I'm 44 at the moment. And you get older and you suddenly think, well, actually, when he was going through that, he was this age. Where was I at that age? Okay. And you're able to look back and go, well, I was a bit lost there. And but what I did one day, and dare I say, it was one of the most mature moments in my life so far, Mike, is that I called. I said, look, I'm just going to say this. I'm not going to put any expectation on you anymore. I said, I'm going to call you occasionally and I'm going to check in with you and just see how you are. And you can call me whenever you want, but I'll never expect you to. So it's everything's completely fine. Anyway, when I found out he was dying, I went and saw him, and I remember I turned up and he burst into tears. And his wife just hugged me. And I met my half-sister, who we're now really close. You know, we're getting close, which is good. And my half brother as well. And anyway, and I remember he walked out, just barely walking to the car because he ended up in a bed, you know, but we had a walking stick, and he said, you know, and he cried. He goes, just remember when the worst happened, you've got a family here. And it was really beautiful. And then I went and looked after him just before Christmas. And it was just me, and the carers popped in occasionally, you know, and we just sat there, Mike, and we watched old films like The Three Amigos, you know, and those kind of films. He likes that whole Chevy Chase thing, and Steve Martin, they sort of that sort of comedy from the 80s, 90s, whatever, 90s, I think. And we sat there, we watched that, and I was able to sit there and read him the Bible, you know, some passages from the Bible. And yeah, it was great. So I feel really good.
So as part of your reconciliation process include forgiveness?
Yeah, so I forgave both him and my stepdad in the power of Jesus. Mm. Yeah.
Was that difficult to do?
Not with Jesus. Mm. No. I was angry. Let me just say it. And for some people who know me, they'll think, not you, Elliot, not you. But internally, I was. I wanted that for so long, that kind of proud of you kind of vibe. And a lot of people want to hear that. And then suddenly you realize you don't need it. You don't need it. When you're able to say, actually, all that matters is the long game. And we all screw up. But when you play the long game, you go, do you know what? Is God proud of me today? And God will always be proud of you. But it's like, am I serving God? Am I being the best I can be in the name of the Lord? Then suddenly you realize, actually, you can just forgive. And forgive them. Forgive yourself for needing to forgive. You know, all of this. And I remember when you get that, when you don't have any more expectation of needing to hear any words, because they're just words, you know, you're able to move on. And it's a really beautiful thing. And I really, really recommend it.
Mm. Well, but there's still tremendous loss. I mean, a 4, 5, 6-year-old boy wants to hear dad say, man, I'm proud of you, son. He wants to have dad around to jump on his lap. And there's a lot of the father wound is a very profound thing for a lot of men. So when I go and speak, I'll ask men to raise their hand. If you grew up with this close relationship with your dad, raise your hand. And sometimes it's from 0 to 30%. I see. This is a big deal for a lot of men.
We got to remember as well is that times are different then and times different now. I mean, it's been a massive jump. You know, if you look at racism, I have a huge problem with racism, you know, and it's a case where, you know, you go back to my nan's generation, racism was big. It was massive in this country. And then...
Is nan grandma?
Yeah, grandma. Sorry. Yeah. Nana, grandma, grandmother. And then you then go into like my parents' generation. And I heard racism growing up. The difference is that I knew it was wrong, but I heard it. And then I've grown up and I know it's wrong. I know it's completely wrong. You know, we're God's children and people have different colored eyes, different shaped ears, different shaped nose, hair, blah, blah. Why can't they have different colored skin? Do you know what I mean? And then, but then it will pass down to my children who, you know, I know it's different, but they're just like, well, people are people, you know, which is great. And it's not like that all over the world, but you know, let's pray that it is. But it's the same with children. So same with parents. So dads back then, it was a lot of knocking about. It was like, I go to work and, you know, the wife cooks the bills and, you know, all of this. And it's kind of different now. So I think part of that is kind of accepting that their upbringing, I think you have to look at the generation before your parents.
Hmm. So what would you say to the man? Okay, first off, you said you hadn't healed from the wound, but you had reconciled. So what's still there?
Well, nothing's there now.
Okay.
Nothing's there now. The reconciliation for me is actually healing. Mm. The reconciliation is the fact that we can now communicate. Mm. We're communicating, and I'm strong with the family, and that, you know, I can remember the good.
Well, you have a very bright, optimistic, enthusiastic personality. So to hear that you lost him yesterday is like, wow, you're here.
Yeah, because the thing is, there is peace. There is peace. He's with the Lord. You know, it's worse for us who's left behind. Mm. But we have to play internal. We have to, what's your story spiritually? Because that is the long game. That is what we are connecting with the Father.
So 30 seconds. Speak to the man who didn't have a close father like you did.
I just want you to know that you have to look at the bigger picture of what they have gone through and not just what you're going through, and pray for them and pray for yourself and realize that it doesn't matter if there isn't a physical words that make you feel good. There is a Father in heaven who loves you so much. You can turn in secret. It doesn't matter where your Christian relationship is at this point. Even if it's not there, you can explore by taking yourself into secret and meeting the Father who will be there in secret. And that could just be God, I want to know you. God, help. God, I'm struggling.
Well, thank you, Elliot, my friend. And we're going to continue this conversation next week. So thank you for joining us, and we'll see you next time.
Thanks for having me, Mike. Do you want to be free?
Blazing Grace is a nonprofit international ministry for the sexually broken and the spouse. Please visit us at blazinggrace.org for information on Mike Janung's books, groups, counseling, or to have Mike speak at your organization. You can email us at email@blazinggrace.org or call our office in Chandler, Arizona at 719-888-5144. Again, visit us at blazinggrace.org. Email us at email@blazinggrace.org or call the office at 719-888-5144.
This program was sponsored by Blazing Grace Ministries.